This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio, 710 WOR. Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Well, it must be a Friday, right? Exactly so. John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg on this Friday, Veterans Day. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. I picked up the paper today, and I cannot tell you how disappointed I am.
What happened?
I love Eddie Murphy. He's very funny. And I think that Billy Crystal is one of the great Americans. He's funny, and he's done lots of stuff for us. He helped us with the World Trade Center Memorial, raising some money. So I can't say enough good things about him, but I thought you should get that job.
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, my friend. That's just what the world needs, is me doing the opening. I don't sing, as you've heard me attempt, and I don't dance.
Well, but you can learn, you know?
Well, maybe so. You're absolutely right about Billy Crystal. He is absolute home run.
And Eddie Murphy's really funny. I love his movie.
Now, you are up at the mansion today, Gracie Mansion.
Up at the mansion. I'm only going to be with you for a few minutes, and then I have a Veterans Day breakfast where we have 400 or 500 people, and we will take some pictures and give a little talk, and then go to Madison Square Park, where a lot of retired and current troops assemble, and people come and talk about the sacrifices that were made and are being made to let us have the great freedoms that we have. And then we have a great parade, good weather for it. It's not, nobody's going to be hot, but it's not going to be freezing, which it is some days and some years. Windy but sunny, and we'll march up Fifth Avenue from about 23rd Street to the mid-50s.
All right. I said Governor Patterson and I have put together a spot which we have running here this morning on WOR, and I suggest that everybody take a moment of silence and think about those that are around the world and have been around the world for centuries, literally, protecting us.
I remember giving a speech at a very liberal college. I gave a commencement speech, and it was on Memorial Day a few years ago, and I wondered how the kids would respond, because they really are, it's a very liberal school, and a lot of them had signs on their backs of their robes, get out of Iraq, and I talked a little bit about the fact that their rights to put those signs on their backs were not rights that people had in a large part of the world, and that those rights were fought for and are protected by people just like them, young boys and girls, almost men and women, who are around the world, dedicate their lives and sometimes give their lives. And it was actually very well received. And afterwards, the president said that he had gotten a lot of good comments, and I had gotten a lot of good comments as I was walking through the crowds afterwards.
Okay, listen, speaking of free speech and the like, the gang is still in Zuccotti Park here, and as you have watched around the country at the various Occupy whatever happened city you want to put in the blank, many of the mayors have said, okay, time is up, time to go.
We are watching it. We'll do what's appropriate when appropriate, and let me just leave it there.
All right, very good.
But I think, listen, it's people want to be able to protest. They have a right to do that. But people that don't want to protest have a right to be able to assemble and to not be heard, but let themselves not be heard. And I don't know how you phrase it, but different points of view should be able to be expressed. And no point of view is just as important. You don't have to protest. You still have rights. And I think everybody understands that, including the people that are in the park at the moment. And we just got to find that balance and get everybody a chance to express themselves.
All right. One of the ways that we get to, our ideas put before or into the rules that we all live by is through our elections. We had an election this past Tuesday. I'm not sure how many people knew that you were backing, I think, six specific candidates in Virginia, all anti-gun people. They all won. Do you read anything into that?
It was heartening, but unfortunately, the group of people who think everybody should be carrying guns, including children and people with psychiatric problems and people with criminal records, still have an enormous amount of power. Guns, we have the toughest gun laws in, I think, of any state, and our state legislature and a whole bunch of governors governors, including the current one and going back, all deserve credit for either helping that get done or helping support it. But the bottom line is guns are very easy to carry across state borders, and so this is a national problem. Since Martin Luther King Jr. and RFK were assassinated back in 1968, 400,000 Americans have been killed with guns in the United States, and that's more Americans than died in World War II. It's worse than a Virginia Tech every day. Virginia Tech, 32 people died tragically today. 34 die every day. And of course, it's not a big story because they're spread across the country. But it's just got to stop, John. And these six people are willing to stand up, and they ran some risks of pro-gun lobby, or however you want to phrase that lobby, fighting against them. And so I said, you know, listen, this is what I believe in, and I'm a big believer in democracy, and you should support those who believe in what you believe and who fight for what you believe. And you can do it with going to work for them in the polls. You can do it by voting for them. You can do it by sending a dollar or whatever you can. I'm in the situation I can help a little more. And, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And congratulations to those six. And hopefully others realize that there's an enormous number of people. When those polls are taken, a majority of the people want reasonable gun controls. They want background checks at gun shows. There's a loophole in the federal law that requires background checks so that you don't have to have them at gun shows, which were supposed to be for casual sellers. And you know, some of the casual sellers have 400 guns in their inventory there. It says that, unfortunately, in this country, you can be on the no-fly list and still buy a gun. And there are lots of legislators who want to have a federal law that says if one state allows you to carry a gun, everybody has to.
That's on the president's desk right now.
It would be a disaster. Can you imagine? Some states, you can have an enormous criminal record and psychiatric problems and be 10 years old, and you'll be able to get a gun. There's just no restrictions. And that's just in a civilized society. It has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. You have a right to bear arms, but there's the federal laws that are there today just need a little bit of tightening so that things like the gun show loophole and a couple of other things, a real list that you can check. Most gun dealers in this country, incidentally, John, are scrupulously honest. They do the background checks required. Big gun sellers like Walmart have been scrupulously careful about following the law and have been very helpful. But the bottom line is there are some people who will sell to anybody, some states where that's allowed, and to let that go throughout this country is just frightening.
I had an interesting conversation with Merrill Tisch yesterday, head of the Regents here in New York, and she's been outspoken about some of the schools and the dollars that are coming from the Race to the Top program, and that in certain schools, she said that we were not going to send any money to these schools unless the unions in the city get an agreement where they can make some changes in administration and staff.
Well,
surprised at this?
In New York City, we use an improvement in schools rather than a level to judge whether the schools are doing a good job. If you have a school with kids who are greatly challenged and they improve dramatically, that's what we should be rewarding rather than worrying about whether that gets them to the level where they're ready for an Ivy League school. That's just some of these kids are probably never going to get there, but if they improve, their chances of sharing the great American dream keep going up. And I don't think there's anybody that's done as much as we have, and I'll let the regents, the Board of Regents, speak for themselves. But, you know, the number of schools, we've been big proponents of raising standards. We just think that when you measure, it should be on improvement, not on a given level. Some kids will never get to a level for college, but will have great careers. They'll have other things that probably require high school diplomas, but don't require great academic skills. There are lots of skills that you can have that make you productive and able to support yourself. And in New York City, the number of schools with the higher standards have gone up, roughly doubled up 100%. In the rest of the state, it's something like 200%. So, you know, I think, and we consistently compare ourselves to the rest of the state only because it's the entire state that takes the same test, whereas because every other state takes a different test. Each one has their own. And so it's hard to compare apples to oranges, but it is apples to apples when you compare us to the rest of the state. And we have, in the last 10 years, made enormous improvements in terms of how we do versus the rest of the state. Now, I think we should all help the rest of the state, and I would certainly support the Board of Regents in doing that, and I like the idea of higher standards. But when you raise the standards, you do it to make a higher bar so people will strive even more. You don't do it to denigrate all of the progress that our great teachers have made, and the parents have worked hard, and private funders have helped, and school crossing guards, and parent coordinators, and principals. And, you know, we're all in this together, and we've made enormous progress. Do we have a long ways to go? Yes, but you don't keep going if you denigrate the progress that you have made.
You were in Washington this week. Who did you speak to? I mean, before what group?
There was two groups, really. One was a liberal think tank. One was a conservative think tank. And together they hosted an event to give me an opportunity to say from the perspective of what's good for, what I think is good for America, but also, more importantly, what I think is good for New York and New York City, which is my responsibility, the city. And I gave a talk about balancing the budget, because people are starting to compare us to some of these European countries that are just falling apart. Congress and the White House all together, both sides of the aisle, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, have been struggling and so far unable to come to agreements with the real reforms. When we have a budget deal, it's typically obfuscation and counting things that are 10 years down the road that you know is never going to happen. And we borrow one out of every $3 that we spend. In the last 10 years, I think the numbers are our federal spending has gone up 15%. Federal revenues have gone up 15%. Federal spending has gone up 80%.
That doesn't work very well, does it?
Well, if you had to, you know, if you made $40,000 a year and spent $60,000, you'd run out of money pretty soon, and no bank would loan you the money. And that's the danger here. America's not going to fall apart, but anybody that thinks there aren't serious consequences, and if you really care about creating jobs, and if you really care about helping the less fortunate, the ways to do it is not the ways that we've been doing it. I think we've seen the stimulus monies may help a little bit, but they certainly aren't the solution. The real problem here is confidence. People don't have confidence in the future. So they don't have the confidence that their kids are going to have a better life than they do. And it's the first time in a long time polls show that. So they're not willing to buy a new house. They're not willing to take a vacation, to buy a new car. Things that we need if we're going to have the economy grow and create jobs. And the same thing is true for business people. They just, when they have regulations and tax policies that are always up in the air. And we have elected officials that scream about prosecuting people who made risky loans to individuals to buy houses, and then we have, at the same time, the same people are criticizing the banks for having too tough standards today. You can't have it both ways. We need to create confidence, and I think the ways to do that is to make everybody feel that they're part of the problem, and so you let the Bush-era tax cuts run out, which would happen assuming Congress doesn't pass a law. And if Congress tries to pass a law, the president has the ability and probably enough backing to veto that law. So the president can solve the revenue side of our budget deficit, which would generate about $4 billion in revenue, simply by saying, I'm going to veto any bill that continues any part of the Bush-era tax cuts, not just for the rich, but for everybody. And then on the expense side, we've studied this. The president put together a commission a while ago, Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson.
Yeah, they had good stuff in that.
Nobody's going to agree with everything, but they did an enormous amount of real quality research, and they found things to cut that will not devastate our country. And to sit and to make decisions based on politics rather than what's good or bad for the country, or to start a four-year process, whatever it is, to relook at all of that is ridiculous. Just have Congress pass the Simpson-Bowles tax revenue cuts, not the expense side, because that's what the president can take care of. Not the revenue side, the president can take care of that. The expense side, pass that. And that will balance the budget in 10 years, but most importantly, it will give everybody confidence that the government, the Republicans and the Democrats, Congress and the president, can act as adults, can work together, and can put politics aside. And I think it'd be good for all of them, for their reelection campaigns, if that's what's in the back of their minds, but it'd certainly be good for their reputation in terms of stand-up people. And, you know, this, if we don't do this, this could be the start of the decline of the greatest superpower, the greatest economic engine created. But you just have to do something. It has to be meaningful. It has to convince everybody. The person who's got to make decisions in their home and spending, and the business people who've got to make decisions on investing and hiring people. And this this was incidentally done back in the Clinton era, and it turned into a real boom in jobs and the economy, the stock market. This country did much better after that was done, a real balanced budget agreement. And so some people say, oh, higher taxes will slow down job creation. They may a tiny bit, but the confidence that would instill would be vastly more important. The cuts will put a few more people out of work. Yes, that's probably true, but it will create an awful lot of jobs for those people and everybody else. And the alternative of doing nothing is just a disaster.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I know you got a reception to go to. I will let you go, and we'll catch up next week.
Good thing to think about for all of us is there are people who just don't have, who put their lives on the line and are helping us. And somebody tweeted me and asked, does the city have programs to help veterans find work? And yes, we have a whole bunch of them called 311. The Mayor's Office of Veteran Affairs has got three employment fairs. There's a whole bunch of different things that we're doing to try to say thank you. When these guys come back and women come back from serving, we've got to help them get jobs. And their jobless rate is higher than those who didn't serve. And we certainly have an obligation. Remember, it's a volunteer armed forces in this day and age. So these are people who are volunteering. They didn't get drafted. They volunteered to do this. And we certainly have an obligation to help them. And today's a good day to think about that. But not just think, but do it.
You're absolutely right. Enjoy the day. Say hello to the troops up there for you, and I'll see you next week.
Talk to you next week.
You bet. Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here on the John Gambling Show.